The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
A Wall Street Journal investigation finds the federal and state agencies tasked with worker safety fell short during the pandemic.
Many of the inspections were being done virtually, and that OSHA was leaving workers vulnerable is what that found as well.
And markets tumble after Fed Chair Jerome Powell speaks at the Wall Street Journal Job Summit. Plus, how will 80,000 volunteers stay safe at this year's Tokyo Olympics? It's Thursday, March 4th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says the U.S. economy is still far from the central bank's employment and inflation goals, and reaffirmed that the Fed will maintain near-zero interest rates until the labor market improves. Powell spoke at the Wall Street Journal Job Summit today.
There's a lot of ground to cover to get back to what I would call maximum employment. We want to see wages moving up. We'd want to see that the gains in employment are broad-based that different demographic groups were experiencing it. So we have a high standard for identifying what maximum employment is, and we think it'll take some time to get there.
New jobless claims rose slightly in the final week of February to 745,000. The four-week moving average was just under 800,000, marking its lowest level since early December. Powell was also asked about the recent surge in bond yields, and his comments shook Wall Street. Our markets reporter Akani Otani explains.
What Jerome Powell indicated was that he is not necessarily concerned with the recent rise in Treasury yields that we've seen. And so, therefore, he's not necessarily going to change the Fed's policy just because we've seen yields rising and, of course, stock prices falling. Now, I think what longer-term investors are having to deal with here is questioning whether they fundamentally sort of mispriced their growth and inflation expectations, because what we're seeing is that the priciest parts of the market and the parts of the market that have run up the most in recent years, technology stocks being a big category there, are coming under the most pressure Thursday. And that has everything to do with this recent rise in yields that we've been seeing. I mean, in a higher yield, higher growth environment, certainly investors tend to become a little bit more reluctant to put their money in more expensive technology stocks, for instance, than in a more low growth, low inflation regime, the likes of which we were sort of in for so much of the prior bull market.
The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury settled at 1.547% this afternoon, the highest yield since February of last year. That's a steep climb from early January, when it was as low as 0.915. Yields rise when bond prices fall. The S&P 500 slid 1.3%, the Nasdaq dropped 2.1%, and the Dow fell 347 points, or 1.1%. The average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage has risen above 3% for the first time since July, according to mortgage finance giant Freddie Mac. Rates have been rising or holding steady for over a month now. They had fallen through most of 2020, fueling a boom in lending, and were below 3% last summer, the lowest in about 50 years of record-keeping. And we report exclusively that the World Health Organization has scrapped plans for an interim report on the origins of the coronavirus pandemic. The decision comes amid rising tensions between the U.S. and China over the WHO's investigation, and as an international group of scientists is calling for a new inquiry. They say the WHO team was given insufficient access during their mission to Wuhan to investigate whether the virus slipped from a lab. Senior reporter Drew Hinshaw has more on the WHO's decision.
In the past few days, we've seen them use language where they sort of distance themselves from the report. They're saying, you know, Dr. Tedros, the director general of the WHO, is saying, oh, this isn't really even a WHO investigation. These are just independent scientists that the WHO, you know, sort of coordinated and got them into place. The WHO has tried to, you know, manage public expectations here, saying, look, we don't have investigatory powers. We can't go to China and demand, give us all your hospital records. That's not something the WHO could or is equipped to do. So in delaying this report, one of the takeaways here is that anything they do will be highly scrutinized and is going to not please one member state or another.
China has been pushing for investigations to determine whether the virus could have originated outside of China and spread there via frozen food imports. Coming up after the break, more on a Wall Street Journal investigation into how OSHA responded to pandemic-related workplace complaints.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
More than 500,000 people have died in the U.S. from COVID-19 over the past year. Many of them were essential workers, employees on the front lines who continued to clock into their shifts at hospitals, grocery stores, food processing plants, and even retail, while others were able to work from home. We've reported throughout the year on outbreaks that were connected to some of those workplaces, especially in the beginning of the pandemic, and about how workplace safety was being regulated during the pandemic and where it was falling short. Now, questions are arising about the federal and state agencies whose job it is to ensure worker safety, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, otherwise known as OSHA. The Wall Street Journal's investigative team has been looking into OSHA for months and has some pretty stark findings about the way they handled complaints of unsafe workplace practices during the pandemic. Our investigative reporter, Alexandra Berzon, was part of the team working on the story, and she joins me now. Hi, Alexandra. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, Alexandra, the Wall Street Journal reviewed complaints filed with federal and state OSHA alleging unsafe working conditions during the pandemic. Were these complaints across any particular industries? And did you find anything in common among the workplaces referenced in these complaints?
This is a very broad, widespread issue that impacts many different types of workplaces. You have essential workers who are not just in healthcare, also in meatpacking, of course, but also grocery store workers, warehouse workers. We looked into a soap packaging plant, which was, of course, you know, early on when a lot of things were shut down, these were workers that were still going to work and had concerns about safety, it seemed.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the people you were introduced to, some of the people who had potential workplace transmission of this virus?
Yeah, one of the people that we looked at was a man named William Moore, who was a worker in a poultry plant in North Carolina. And what we found had happened in that plant was that very early on in April during the pandemic, workers started complaining from the Butterball plant in Mount Olive, North Carolina, saying that the virus was spreading, there was not social distancing, and the company wasn't doing enough, essentially, and that they were concerned about it. In this case, North Carolina's OSHA agency, the Workplace Safety Agency, responded by telling the company Butterball that they had gotten these complaints. They wrote a letter to Butterball saying, we got these complaints, but in fact, we looked at them. We don't think there's any rules that you've broken that this would suggest. There's no real issues here, but we are in terms of OSHA standards, but we are telling you about it and we'd like you to investigate, but you don't have to respond to us. And Butterball, they did respond and they said, you know, we are considering giving out masks to our employees and doing social distancing. And that was pretty much the end of it. But then these complaints kept coming and the response was pretty much the same from North Carolina OSHA. Eventually, the health department did step in, it seems, and created the local county health department created kind of an arrangement with Butterball. We saw emails where the health department itself was becoming very concerned about this spread. There were eventually at least 80 cases there, and William Moore, who did pass away from COVID. And William Moore's death was never actually reported to the state. There is a requirement that companies report workplace fatalities to OSHA. Now, federal OSHA did kind of relax that a little bit in the earlier days of the pandemic up through like the end of May, and basically told many companies outside of the healthcare industry that they didn't have to report many of the deaths or really look too hard into whether they were workplace related. This would have been during that time period, and this death was not reported to the state. Butterball, I should say, you know, they do say that they have been very concerned with the safety of the workers and they don't consider those to be workplace deaths. They don't believe that there was anyone who died who got COVID from work. William Moore's family did tell us he wasn't doing anything at the time, really, other than going to work. And so, but the company did take that position.
And to be clear, county health documents showed that there were 80 COVID-19 cases at the Butterball plant by the end of April. So, Alexandra, what were some of the overall conclusions that you were able to draw after examining all of these records?
We found that in many cases, you know, OSHA, and when I speak of that, I'm really referring to both the federal agency that investigates about half of the state's workplaces, and then the federal agency also oversees state agencies. So in both state and federal, we found that there was really a scaling back of the actual enforcement in terms of inspecting complaints going into workplaces related to COVID. And there was even an inspector general report that came out from the Labor Department just last week that had some of the same findings, that many of the inspections were being done virtually and that OSHA was leaving workers vulnerable is what that found as well.
And in fact, the journal identified more than 1,000 worker deaths from COVID-19 that circumstances suggest were linked to transmission of the virus in the workplace, but that were never investigated by an OSHA agency as of early February. What can you tell us about OSHA's preparedness here for handling this type of health crisis?
Yeah, I mean, the agency, its mandate is to do enforcement for both health and safety. So health is kind of built in, but most of the standards and rules that are written are more addressing both acute kind of injuries at work and then chemical safety, chemicals in the workplace, that kind of thing. It was a challenge. It was something that, you know, came on very strong, and certainly, you know, they didn't have the exact rules in place, the ones that to address COVID in particular. And they also declined to issue temporary rules. Some states did do so. The federal government didn't. And so there was a challenge in terms of having the rules in place that they could enforce. So that was definitely one of the challenges that OSHA faced. I mean, I should say that the agency last year did take the position that they did have the appropriate rules to enforce. And under the new administration, they are now looking into writing temporary emergency rules to address COVID specifically.
What about employers, whether directed by OSHA or not? What responsibility do they bear if they don't correct issues that were flagged by their employees?
The employers were largely told by OSHA when complaints were coming in about their workplaces, they were generally told to do self-investigations and then to report back. And when we looked at many, many documents, what we found is that they were largely like saying, yes, everything's fine, or here's what we did. And then OSHA was simply closing the cases following that. Employers under the law do have a responsibility to have a safe workplace. And OSHA has reiterated that in terms of COVID as well. And then they did do some enforcement and issue some citations, but it was more limited is what we found.
How is OSHA responding to all of this now after the investigation? What are they saying about their potential liability here?
They took the position under the previous administration that they did not think that there was a problem and that it was, and that they were doing very effective and proper enforcement. That was their statement to us and to others who have covered similar issues. Since then, with the new administration, there has been somewhat more of an acknowledgement that they would like to potentially ramp up enforcement. They've said that they're working on that. I mentioned earlier an inspector general report that came out last week, and OSHA responded to that and said that they agreed with many of the recommendations and that they were working on making changes in their approach.
That's Wall Street Journal investigative reporter Alexandra Berzon. Alexandra, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
And finally, there's been a lot of conversation about how to keep athletes, spectators, and staff safe at the Tokyo Summer Olympics. But organizers haven't said much about how to keep 80,000 volunteers safe. These essential workers really make the Olympics run. They chaperone athletes around the city, mop up sweaty volleyball floors, and even perform medical tasks like helping to execute blood doping tests. And these volunteers interact with nearly everyone at the games. But our senior sports reporter, Rachel Bachman, says aside from mask mandates and social distancing, volunteers aren't being given a lot of guidance or protections.
There's certainly a lot of threats to these Olympics, and the issue with volunteers is probably the least discussed one. I spoke with the head of the London 2012 volunteers, and he raised a good point. He said, if you have somebody in the aquatic center or the velodrome and they prove positive of COVID, basically all the people they've been in contact with would have to isolate. And those are both venues with potentially hundreds or even thousands of people in them. So you could imagine the havoc that, for instance, one infected volunteer might wreak on an Olympic Games. But there's a real concern that some of them could decide not to come and perform their jobs because of fear of contracting COVID. And so that's another thing that the Tokyo organizers need to be concerned about.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.